Moving on, the final point is combining Mountain Goat units G3 and G13 into a single GNU that matches the current boundary for a sheep unit S11 and updating the related hunt code. This is on page 38, 39 in chapter W0 and page 1 and 3 in the attached version of chapter W2, which is pink in your version. So over the last 10 years, the number of goats in G3 has been declining and the number of goats in G13 has been stable or increasing. Given no biological reason, these units should be separated. The units have been combined into a single unit, G3, that overlaps the bighorn sheep unit, S11, and the corresponding hunt codes have been updated, which you can see on pages 1 and 3 in the attached version of W2. So that is all I have for you for Chapter W0, Madam Chair.
Great. Any questions? Thank you. Any questions or a motion?
Any public comment on the other items in Agenda Item 11? Okay, I'll take a motion if anyone is so inclined. It's on Agenda Item 11. Is there a motion to adopt annual changes to Chapter W0 as proposed by staff?
So moved.
Second? Great. That was Commissioner Schaefer for the second. I'm sorry. For the okay. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Thank you, Krista. On to drum roll. 12.
Yeah. We'll move on to the big agenda item 12, which is Chapter W2, Big Game. This is green in color on your devices. And again, this is step 2 of 2. As you probably see, this is a very large agenda item covering all of the requested issue paper changes that were presented to you in November of 2019. Changes to implement and codify the approved 2020-2024 big game season structure framework. We have 2020 quota recommendations for bighorn sheep and mountain goats. We also have 2020 harvest limit recommendations for mountain lions. So I'll start by turning this over to Andy Holland, our big game coordinator, to cover bighorn sheep and mountain goat quota and season date recommendations for 2020.
Commissioner Garcia. Sorry, the chocolate croissant.
I just wanted to catch you while you were doing that.
So good.
I have a quick question before we get started, and this is just because I'm always technically challenged, but as I was going through the restrictions, on page 24, which is 35 on ours, that is special restrictions number 209. It says private land only seasons. All applicants for private land only licenses must obtain permission prior to hunt from at least one private landowner within the game management unit prior to. And then we have stricken applying for a license and inserted hunting. And that's fine, but I didn't see it anywhere in our materials that was something that we were voting on.
Yeah, this was identified by staff during our regulations review and was considered kind of an administrative cleanup. We realized there was really no way for us, we couldn't really enforce, applying for a license, and so we've replaced it with hunting for applicants that need to obtain permission to hunt on private lands. So thank you for bringing that up.
I just want to make sure it's not something that we need to vote on.
We will have a separate section later on to vote on some of these administrative cleanup items. So
got
we
it.
Will cover that later. But
so it wasn't just me. Okay.
No, you're great. Right on.
Welcome, Andy.
Thank you. Commissioners, Madam Chair, Director Ponzel, Director Gibbs. I'm Andy Holland, the CPW Big Game Manager, and it's my pleasure today to present staff recommendations for 2020 bighorn sheep and mountain goat license recommendations. I'm going to be heavier on discussion, information, and lighter on numbers. I realize not everybody is into the data as I maybe am. However, if anybody wants to pop the hood on this thing, the tables in your packet for item 11 are PDF page 8, and there's a table for each species that have population estimates, the basis for those estimates, whether it was an aerial count, coordinated ground count, agency observation, or public report, the previous licenses, the current recommendations, harvest, previous and predicted, as well as harvest rates are all in those tables. So we can dive if anybody has an appetite. I also wanted to point out that they're color-coded, so green means populations and licenses are going up, yellow is down. So that's as much as we probably need to cover on that unless it comes up later. Those are also posted online for applicants for sheep and goat licenses, so they can be informed about where they apply. One thing I want to emphasize is the very highly regulated nature of all big game, but in particular bighorn sheep and mountain goat hunting. There's more helicopter inventory dollars spent, more field time by staff and the public, and more discussion per license than any other species we manage. So these recommendations don't come lightly. There's a lot of thought and effort that goes into every single license in this packet. Part of the reason for this is the extremely important watchable wildlife and conservation species that we're dealing with. With that, I'll start with our state animal, the Rocky Mountain Bighorn Sheep. A little historical context is important here. We'll never know how many bighorns we had prior to settlement, but suffice to say they were very abundant and there were a lot of bighorn sheep in Colorado. They underwent dramatic declines from market hunting, subsistence hunting, and disease-related die-offs from domestic sheep in the late 1800s. In 1885, the legislature closed sheep hunting, and it didn't open again at very low levels until 1953. So I actually did the math yesterday on that, and that was 68 years with no sheep hunting in Colorado. And I've given you this presentation many times, and I never even really thought how many years that was with no sheep hunting. So we're in a good spot. These recommendations are far improved from where we were back then. So the second phase, so that this figure starts right about 1953 when sheep hunting was reopened. This phase here between 1945 and about 2000 was an era of trap and transplant where we moved through over 150 translocations. We moved sheep and started populations, reintroduced sheep to previously existing places where they had either been extirpated or had died from disease. And so from all that effort, we moved over 2,500 sheep. You can see the dramatic increase in bighorn sheep in the state of Colorado. The modern peak was 2001, where we had 7,600, and we've been around 7,000, give or take, for 25 years. Now we're in a different phase of sheep management, where we've already reintroduced sheep and done transplants to the vast majority of the suitable habitat that does not have domestic sheep or goats nearby, which is important because in order to maintain healthy bighorns, we need to maintain separation between domestics and wild sheep. So that's sort of the background on populations. Our current estimate is 6,940, so way out here on the right. Again, fairly stable over the course of 25 years. This figure shows our bighorn sheep game management units. These are the hunting units. We have 70 Rocky Mountain bighorn sheep units, essentially coast to coast, if you will, here within the Rocky Mountains. And then these four blue game management units are the desert bighorn sheep subspecies that I'll talk about here in a couple minutes. So to cut to the chase on Rocky Mountain bighorn license recommendations, we're recommending an increase of 10 from 309 to 319 for 2020. That's an increase of 4 ram for 236, an increase of 6 ewe for 83. And just to emphasize extraordinary demand from hunters to hunt these species. I do want to emphasize that hunting is the cornerstone for wildlife management and wildlife management and conservation in North America. Being that cornerstone, we had 28,380 applicants last year for those 309 licenses, just to show the extreme interest in being able to hunt one of these incredible animals. Moving on, this is desert sheep in those four blue units I showed in the southwest corner. We did transplant efforts from 1978 to 2001. We did 12 transplants of 218 desert bighorns from Utah, Nevada, and Arizona. And it may not sound like a lot, but 12 out-of-state transplants is a lot of effort. It took a lot of work and financial resources to get this done. And you can see it was extremely successful. The two largest herds in the Southwest declined in the early 2000s, and they've actually, thankfully, come right back. Our current estimate is 550, which is the highest estimate we've ever had, and the license recommendation before you is 14 RAM licenses, and that's also the most we've ever had. It's no change from last year, but 14 is the most we've had. Moving on to mountain goats. Mountain goats were introduced into Colorado in 1948 from Montana, and then subsequently we moved them around to various other ranges. You can see these are the mountain goat GMUs here. Most of them are in the Central Rockies. We did our own transplant efforts around the state, and you can see, and the objective for that was for wildlife viewing and hunting opportunity. You can see that was wildly successful. The mountain goats increased dramatically. They peaked out about 2,000 in 2005, and we have intentionally reduced many of those goat populations since then, not only to reduce competition with bighorn sheep and some of our high-priority herds, but also to protect sensitive alpine plants from overgrazing. With our current population estimate is 1,585, a slight uptick from last year. And then with that, we're recommending a decrease of 17 mountain goat licenses for 2020, from 236 down to 219. And the majority of these reductions are from the G7 population, the Grays and Torreys Peak. Those are somewhere like right here west of us. And that population, the estimates are down for this year. So that's why we do this annually. Our estimates from this summer are down. And so we're therefore reducing license recommendations in those three herds, G15, G16, and G7. And with that, I can take any questions on bighorn sheep and mountain goat license recommendation.
Thank you, Andy. I have a question. What do you think is causing our estimates being down? Is it previous year's drought or lack?
You talking about the mountain goat?
Yes.
I don't know that we for sure know. We've had some disease issues in the goats in that part of the state. I don't know if you guys that have been on the commission a while recall we had some bacterial diarrhea mortality in G4, which is just east of that herd, and G6, the gore, that population dramatically declined about 8 years ago, eight or so years ago. So that's really remote country. We don't know what happened there, but the population went from like 165 to 25, and this one's right in between. I think there often we suspect disease when a population goes down for unknown reasons, but I guess I don't have a firm answer for you. It could just be we've had enough licenses in there that we have reduced that population, and now we've detected it through flights. But on this one, I think something's going on because we fly this every year, and we have a pretty good inventory coordinated ground count in there in the summer as well. So it's probably not an inventory improvement. It's probably an actual reduction in population.
Thank you. So staff, do you want to make motions on each of these topics as we go? Because this whole thing is a number of different action items. Okay, we'll keep it separated and more clear that way. Okay, so thank you, Andy. That said, I was going to hold all agenda item 12 public comment until the end, but it sounds like if we're going to make a motion on this, I need to see if any of the blue slip, if there's any public comment on this topic of agenda item 12. Let me know. Please. I'm sorry, if you don't mind, we need to be able to, because we're live streaming, we do need to be able to hear on the microphone. So if you don't mind coming forward, thank you. It's okay. Take your time. We're a big, scary, intimidating crew.
I have anxiety issues. I'm sorry. I'm really here for the mountain lion.
Oh, okay.
Cougar, but I oppose any increase in the killing of wildlife. They're not here to be able to speak for themselves, so I'm here to speak for them. I know that there's a lot of money involved with the amount of money that you get from this, but the long-term effects of killing these animals are yet unknown, or some of it is known and some of it's still unknown.
No problem. Do you mind just stating your name for the record?
My name's Jody Lehman.
Great.
And I live technically in Morrison, but closer to Conifer.
Okay.
And like I said, I'm here more for the big cats, but really any animal.
Thank you. Thank you for your comments, and thank you for taking your time out of the day. Any questions or comments? Okay. So we'll take a motion just for this section. Is there a motion to adopt the 2020 bighorn sheep and mountain goat season dates and quotas as proposed by staff?
Mm-hmm.
Moved by Commissioner Haskett, second.
Yes.
By Commissioner Vigil. We can do a roll call. So, I don't know why I'm messing that up today. Voice vote. All in favor, please say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Krista, before you continue, I did want to recognize former Commissioner Jeff Crawford. Thank you for being here as well. Welcome. Okay, Krista, on to the next one. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Well, your permission, Madam Chair, I guess I would like to invite up Mark Vieira next, who is our carnivore and fur bearer program manager, and he'll walk us through the harvest limit recommendations for mountain lions for 2020.
Well, good morning, Madam Chair, Commissioners, Director Prenzlow, Director Gibbs. My name's Mark Vieira. I'm Colorado Parks and Wildlife's carnivore and fur bearer program manager. And I'm here today to talk to you about our staff recommendations for the April 2020 to March 2021 lion harvest limits. While this early part of the talk here may be a bit of a review for some commissioners that were here for my last harvest limit presentation in January of 19, I did want to spend a couple minutes providing a brief update or sort of review of Colorado's system of lion harvest management to get everyone up to speed before presenting the actual harvest limit recommendations for this next year. So again, in review, lions are hunted in Colorado during our primary winter season from mid-November to March 31st. Additionally, in specific units when harvest is below our management objectives and harvest limits that were set for that winter season, lions can also be hunted during the month of April. We'll talk about those recommendations in a second as well. Lions may be harvested via encounter or spot and stalk methods with the use of predator calls and with the use of hounds. And in Colorado, about 90% of our lions are harvested with the use of hounds. Hound hunting is and I mentioned this in March of 19 when we had another talk on lions. I want to come back to it. Hound hunting is an important tool that we have here in Colorado because it allows hunters to be selective of the age and gender of lion that they take. They can assess the track before they turn out, trying to assess the age and gender of that animal. When the animal's in the tree, they're able to look at it as well and make an assessment about whether that animal is taken or not, harvested or not. So that selective aspect of hound hunting is important. We have regulations in place that limit the number of dogs that can be used and require hunters to be present at the beginning of the hound pursuit so the lions are not held at bay while the hunter is transported later into the field. All harvested lion meat must be made suitable for human consumption, and heads and hides must be presented in person by a hunter for a mandatory inspection and sealing process at a Parks and Wildlife office within 5 days of taking that animal. A suite of data is collected at that time, including sex, harvest unit, location of harvest, and a tooth for aging the animal is collected by staff as well. The hide is tagged with a unique physical seal and a unique seal number to allow for legal possession. And then that's the record number that Colorado Parks and Wildlife uses for tracking that mortality. Lion licenses are unlimited in number and are made available over-the-counter for hunters that have successfully completed our Colorado Parks and Wildlife Lion Hunter Education and Identification course. Lion license sales have averaged around 2,500 per year the last couple of years. hunters can hunt statewide in any open unit during the season. So while lion licenses are unlimited to provide opportunity, lion harvest mortality is managed through the use of these annual unit-specific harvest limits. These, of course, are the recommendations, the harvest limit recommendations, that we're going to be speaking about here in a few minutes. And they represent the uppermost threshold of mortality that is allowable in a given year in a given unit. Each season, lion units open with a full harvest limit. If and when that unit reaches its harvest limit, they are closed to any additional harvest for the rest of the year until the following season, as regulated by this process. Upon harvest, hunters are required to notify Colorado Parks and Wildlife within 48 hours of taking the lion, and that animal is then deducted from the harvest limit in that unit. Hunters are required to check an online report of harvest limits that are open no earlier than 5 p.m. every night before they hunt. A screenshot of that report is provided up here for you on the slide. This regularly updated report provides the current closer status for each unit and how many lions remain available in the harvest limit before that unit will be closed. So that's the process to inform things there. Unless there's any questions, I guess I'd like to move from the background information on harvest limits into the actual recommendations for April, March. Okay. Seeing no questions. We have included a map of Colorado's data analysis units, or DAUs, on page 3 of the lion recommendation memo. I believe that is item 12B in your packet. And this map that we have, the map will be on page 3, as well as a summary statistic table that would be on page 4 of that packet. Sort of walking through that summary statistic data table, a lot of numbers in there, but starting on sort of the left side of that statistics page, the current year's harvest limits and then the upcoming April 2020, March 2021 recommendations are provided there. We also, from the left, moving across that table to the right, provide historic 3-year averages of harvest, female composition in harvest, total mortality, and female composition in total mortality, as well as lion-caused game damage information moving towards the right. That very last column shows the status of the April 1st to April 30th 2020 season, with DAUs being open based on being below management thresholds and having had unused harvest limits in the previous year. And then at the very bottom of that summary table, we provide statewide totals at the bottom of each column. So you can see that our 3-year harvest average has been 495 lions, and our 3-year total mortality average has been 598 lions. This difference of about 100 lions is made up through road kills, removals, and game damage and conflict lions. So based on the use of Colorado Parks and Wildlife's newer habitat model, our resource selection function model that I mentioned briefly last March, if we use that to kind of get a rough potential lion population projection for the state, and then we look at this harvest from 2018 to 2019, our last year of harvest, we would come in at about a 12.5 to about 14% harvest rate. So that's kind of our harvest rate last year. In this most recent year, Colorado's 2018 to 2019, our statewide harvest was 540 lions, and this included 7 lions taken in April, during the April season. So you can see April is a real small component of the rest of the year. As you can see here on this graph, our statewide harvest is shown by gender in these bars. So you can see hunter harvest of males is in red, hunter harvested females, a smaller proportion is in sort of this light white. Those bars there with 18-19 at the far right-hand side. And you can see here that we've had about 3 or 4 years of fairly flat harvest mortality, and then in 18-19, we definitely saw a little spike up. The orange line represents total mortality, so again, it's that harvest component with the additional pieces of roadkill and removal on top of it, And you can see that we also kind of reached a high here this year. I think that it's driven in large part by this increase in harvest, that overall mortality is increased in this, seen in this little bump of harvest last year. And I'd attribute that increase in harvest to two things. We had very good snow conditions across Colorado last winter, repeated snowfalls, not super deep snow, not as much wind, so good tracking conditions. And then secondly, we sold about another 10% or another 250 lion licenses, getting us up into 2,700 lion licenses we sold last year. So those two things, I think, are responsible for that increase. Staff is recommending an increase for the 2020 season of 17 lions across the state. That would take our statewide harvest limit from 647 lions in this present year to 664 lions next year. This includes a harvest limit increase across 5 DAUs and a status quo recommendation in the remaining 14 DAUs. So I'm going to quickly step through those proposed changes. There is a map in your packet, as well as the map up here on the projector, to kind of orient where we are and what we're talking about in terms of these units. So in L2 here to the north, Bears Ears, we propose an increase of 7 lions. In L5 Middle Park, right there, we propose an increase of 2 lions. In L17 on the southeastern plains, an increase of 5 lions. In L19 Trinchera, an increase of 2. And in the Rio Grande, L20, an increase of 1. And our recommendation for the 14 remaining lion DAUs is to maintain the status quo level from last year's, or this current year, the 1920 harvest limits, maintain them as status quo. In L6 Glenwood and L9 Grand Mesa, we recommend changes in the hunt code groupings, how we group those GMUs together, but that won't affect, there's no net effect in a DAU harvest limit change there. As far as the April season, April 1 to April 30, 2020 goes, we are recommending the season be open in the following 9 DAUs: L1, L2, L4, L11, L12, L17, L23, and L24. In L11, which involves the Upper Arkansas Research Project, per the goals of that plan, the April season would be closed in the 4 study GMUs of 49, 57, 58, 581, but would be open in the rest of the DAU.
I'm going to hold questions till the end if you don't mind, Mark. Or not till the end of the whole topic, but till the end of your presentation.
Okay. And then lastly, just a word, I'm almost done. Lastly, a word on our future lion planning development. All but 3 of these current 19 lion management plans were written in 2004. There have been significant contributions to the state of knowledge in lion research and in management from both inside and outside Colorado since that time. So that is why it is an agency priority to draft and present a lion plan at a much larger scale to you, the Colorado Parks and Wildlife Commission, in 2020. This new approach to lion management at a larger spatial scale, much bigger than the traditional DAU boundaries that we've seen on the map here today, will allow management to reflect the realities of lion biology and habitat use across the state, will eliminate the need and staff time required to revise 19 different DAU plans, and will allow flexibility for managers at local levels while providing lion population stability. So thank you, and I would take any questions you might have.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you for all this work. Commissioner Adam.
Thank you. Just had a quick question about the game damage claim. It seems that L7 and L9 have very high, almost the highest by quite a bit comparatively, but there doesn't seem to be any adjustments to their harvest limits. Can you speak to that?
I don't know if anyone's here that's got more direct knowledge on the damage pieces there, but it's one component. Game damage is one component that we have in our lion management plans. Does going in excess of $1,000 on a game damage average necessitate necessarily increase in harvest? No, it's viewed as part of kind of this suite of metrics and things that we're evaluating.
Right, I understand level. That. But, for example, L7 is 13,000, 9 is 14,000, while the highest next comparison is 3,000. So I understand the suite. It was very helpful to get that idea.
Yeah, and
thank you.
And some of that also comes from what's going on locally. If it's a DAU that's got a lot of agricultural producers, sheep mainly, on public land allotments, we're going to see that increase. And you might notice that some of the objectives in those DAUs are also to attempt to reduce lions to a degree, partially to address that.
Awesome. Thank you very much. And I think this actually speaks to something I've been giving some thought to, just in how we approach our herd management and how we vote on it. I'm just curious if we've ever considered looking at a unit more comprehensively, so looking across the different species in a particular unit, because, you know, there's obviously, you know, they're not in isolation from the others, and so not for you to answer this moment, but perhaps for something for us to consider, I would love to explore that option and look at our systems more comprehensively. Thank you.
Thank you. Director Prenzlow.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My eyes aren't what they used to be, but I think L7 is in the northwest, if I'm not mistaken. So I don't see Regional Manager Romanski's. Oh, there is. Maybe he could take a stab. I suspect this is a sheep by lion, but I'll let him take a stab at it.
J.T. Romanski, Northwest Regional Manager. Thank you, Director. This will be very brief. It is sheep. To a large extent, we've got some of the largest producers up in that area, and so we are trying to work with them as well as land management agencies to balance some of those ecological needs out there. So, but it's a great question, Commissioner. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Garcia.
Just to clarify, maybe you covered this, but
yeah,
you said that if we go down to L20 that the splitting of 76 had no effect on your total numbers allocation for, is that correct?
So the L20 issue was a one lion increase,
right.
And that's, we had three GMUs that were together with
right.
a harvest limit of five
right.
by splitting the proposals to go 3-3.
But what and maybe I missed it, was on the other one, which is in L6, is opening GMU 471.
Yep.
In addition to some other movement.
Right.
Did that change the allotment at all?
It did not. We were able to make that work in a way that just allocated that same existing harvest limit.
Thank you.
Commissioner Vigil.
Mark, thanks for all the work you do on this. Question on L19, the Trichera DAU. My understanding is that harvest quota was reached really early, probably because for a change we've got some snow down there.
Right.
So I'm surprised that it closed really quick because the quota was reached. Why we're only increasing by two lions?
I can take a stab at that. We raised the harvest limit last year,
right.
as you recall, and it did indeed close here this year already. That's a new plan. It's a new DAU plan for L19 that we just brought to you about a year ago. And what we're looking at there is assessing opportunity for more lion harvest while using an adult female metric as sort of a feedback mechanism. That information lags a year. As you could expect, we're just getting the teeth on lions that are harvested right now and won't know that data for the age of those animals, whether they're adult females or not, for quite a while. So, again, in deference to any local managers that were involved in that decision, I know the idea was to continue to increase that harvest. And at this point, given the increase from the year before and the metrics still being indicative of not having sort of reached an upper threshold, adding two more in.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mark. I do have some public comment on this topic. I think, Aubin Royal, I know that you have a couple of items, so if you want to, do you want to speak to this topic now, or do you want to wait till the end of this agenda item? Okay, thank you. And I'm going to hold on to your slip for the other agenda item. Welcome.
Hi. Good morning, Chair Zimmerman and members of the Commission. My name is Aubin Royal. I'm the Colorado State Director for the Humane Society of the United States. On behalf of our supporters in Colorado, I submit the following comments regarding CPW recommendations for mountain lion hunting. As you'll see from the comments we submitted on January 10th, we're opposed to the recommendations because we believe they allow for unnecessary and excessive trophy hunting of Colorado's large native carnivores. We are very supportive of CPW's proposed efforts to update their existing mountain lion management plans. We believe these plans must include population and density estimates for mountain lions based on the best available research in Colorado and beyond. Our greatest concerns with CPW's mountain lion management remain, as we believe the agency harvest limits that are exceedingly high and not sustainable for such a rare keystone species. This year's recommendations propose yet another increase to the limits, the highest proposed since 2004. Yet CPW continues to operate without reliable habitat and density estimates for this species. While we wait to see the outcome of the lion management plans, we believe the agency must manage the state's mountain lions conservatively. Therefore, we request that CPW significantly reduce harvest limits for the mountain lions in the state. One suggestion for doing so is to allow no more than 11 to 14% of the independent age mountain lion population, or a limit of 258 mountain lions based on estimates by the agency staff. Furthermore, CPW should limit the female offtake rate to no more than 25% of the annual trophy hunt mortality for each DAU based on a three-year average in order to prevent the over-persecution of female mountain lions. Colorado's mountain lions are iconic to the state of Colorado and highly valued by the majority of our residents and visitors alike. They support other wild species and ecosystem functions. Native carnivores also play a huge role in helping Colorado and other states address the spread of ungulate diseases like chronic wasting disease. We believe the agency must expand its role from conserving native carnivores for trophy hunting purposes to one in which all wildlife are honored for their intrinsic value, and management is based on the needs of the animals as well as the public majority. Commissioners, we ask you to reject the mountain lion recommendations and consider reducing harvest limits and licenses for these species so we may better conserve them for all Coloradans now and well into the future. I won't comment on the black bear issue right now, but we have similar concerns, as you might imagine, for the black bear recommendations. Thank you.
Thank you, and I'm going to hold on to your slip for black bear as well. Any questions or comments for Robin? Okay, thank you. Bill Canterbury. Welcome. Mm-hmm.
Good morning, Commissioners, Director Prinsloo, and Madam Chair. My name's Bill Canterbury, and I'm representing Colorado Cattlemen's Association and myself on this lion. And from CCA, we support it, staff recommendation. There's a couple things I'd like to go over, and one is on the where you pull up when you're hunting lions the night before. The gentleman that was up here had it up there. The only thing that I've always thought would help us with knowing the lion harvest while we're hunting the lions, it doesn't state the sex of the lions that are being harvested. And where we're asked to keep the ratio, right now I believe it's 30-60 roughly, two-thirds males and one-third females, it would help. And I'm not saying every hunter out there that's hunting is going to work at it as hard, but in the outfitting business and stuff, if we knew as we're getting close to closing the lion quota, if we had that in front of us, it would help to say, hey, we need to go harvest another tom to keep that ratio. Now, to follow up with that, if you back up a lot of years, we used to be at 40-60 on female harvest and toms. And in my opinion, we could go back to 40-60 and not hurt our lion population at all. But what I would like to see is if there is some way in the future we could add that the sex of the lions to that, just so as we're harvesting them, we would know where we're at on the harvest. Even though overall, I don't think we've ever hurt the lion population at all on that. But that's about all I have.
Thank you. Questions or comments? Commissioner Garcia. Yeah,
so just let me be clear. So when I go online and look, I can see how many licenses are available. And you're saying right now that's all you see?
Yeah, you see the numbers, and then it,
right.
It'll say how many's left and open or closed.
Right.
But if we had a column right there,
I thought, because they're tagged in.
And so when they get that information, they could easily add the sex right on there for us.
Thank you.
Looks like Mr. Vieira has a response to that.
Okay.
Thank you.
I just didn't know, Mark, if that would be easy to do or if it's a possibility.
Hopefully. Yeah.
No, it's a great suggestion. It's one we thought about. So we're talking about the online report that replaced the phone system, and it currently provides fairly, could be hour to hour, based on as quickly as the information is received by us on a check or on a phone call, data on what's been harvested, but it doesn't have gender. We talked about this. It would be, I think, really useful if we could accomplish it. The challenges, of course, are that hunters are required to bring the animal in within 5 days physically for check and call in within 48 hours. And how that gender piece is recorded and then the feedback loop to get it reported back out in that format, if you can imagine that timeline there, that's pretty tricky. So I think a great suggestion. Still a lot of questions of how we would implement that.
Fair enough. Thank you. Any other additional? Thank you, Mr. Canterbury, for your time. Any other additional public comment? I have a number of blue slips, but I think they're. Commissioner Garcia, and then I see a hand back there. If you want to.
I would ask that if that's something that we could, the staff division could just take a look at.
Yeah, sounds like Mr. Vieira's team is doing that.
That'd be great.
We'll take a look at if there's a way to make that happen. Thank you.
Thank you.
Please come forward if you don't mind. Like I say, I've got a number of other blue slips on the topic, but I think they're for other bullet point items later on in the agenda. But yeah, if you do want to speak on this, please come forward and let us know your name, and you have 3 minutes on the clock.
Thank you. My name's Deborah Taylor. I did turn in a blue slip, but on a different topic. I did not catch this one.
Okay.
Thank you. I'm a almost 40-year Colorado resident. I live in both Denver and in Teller County. I live bordered on public land. I am asking respectfully that you consider eventually removing hunting with dogs for any of our predators. Many of the people in our mountain community, we get out and we walk with our dogs. We enjoy nature. And the only time anybody's had any conflict of seeing anything is when we're out walking with our dogs. And some people have talked about that they didn't have problems like that 30, 40, 50 years ago. I don't know if that's true or not, but I am asking that eventually it be considered, maybe a trial 5 years of ending hunting with dogs. There are cases in Wisconsin where people were out walking dogs in areas that were hunted with dogs, and the predators attacked the people who were out walking with their dogs. So I don't know if anybody's ever considered any of that, but it's something that is on my mind. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions or comments for Ms. Taylor? Okay. I think what I'd like to do is take a motion for this. Oh, we do have more. Sure. Thank you. Ms. Lehman, please.
Becomes easier the second time. I got my emotions better.
Perfect.
But I did have something that I wanted to read. It's very short. It says, I oppose the big game hunting increases. I'm here to speak on behalf of the animals who cannot attend such meetings, move more specifically the mountain lions that inhabit this great state. Increasing the number of killings per year is an unnecessary act, can have long-term effects, which by listening to the commentary here, it's like we don't really realize what the effect is. It's like we're not thinking about the effect until after the act is done. Sometimes that's too hard to come back from. So increasing the number of killings per year is an unnecessary act and can have long-term effects on our environment. These animals have just as much right to these lands as we do, maybe even more so. They were here probably before us. Their lives are worth more than the money that would be generated by increasing the killings. And I'm asking that the members of this commission please reconsider allowing the increase and the killings of all wildlife, more specifically the poor mountain lions. I came from the state of Florida, so I'm a transient here, but we have the Florida panther basically gone, and I would hate for the mountain lion to end up in the same condition. I agree with everything that the young lady from the Humane Society said. She says it much more elegantly than I do, but I agree with everything that she said. And I think we can set an example to the other states that are also talking about increasing the killings by saying, no, we don't want to do that anymore. We want to preserve our wildlife. And that's all. Thank you.
Thank you. Any comments or questions? Okay. If there's no other public comment, I think I'd like to hear a motion, and then Krista will take a look at the time and we'll figure out how we want to get whatever we're going to get done before lunch and what we're going to push to after lunch. So, however, before that conversation, is there a motion to adopt the 2021 harvest limits and season dates for mountain lions as proposed by staff?
So moved.
Second. Moved by Commissioner Garcia, second by Commissioner Vigil. Given the public comment, I'm wondering if we should do a roll call vote. Laura, if that's okay. Okay. Thank you. Sorry, I gave you no warning. Okay, roll call vote, please.
Adams?
Yes.
Lecca?
Yes.
Ray?
Yes.
Garcia?
Yes.
Haskett?
Yes.
Hauser?
Yes, and with sensitivity and appreciation for the public comment.
Daniel is absent. Schaefer?
Yes.
Vardy?
Yes.
Vigil?
Yes.
Chair Zimmerman?
Yes, and I'm going to ditto Commissioner Hauser. I very much appreciate the comments and know that we do take all of those things into consideration. Thank you.
Motion carries unanimously.
So, Krista, given that we have 20 minutes before lunch, I don't think we're going to get through all of these. I believe much of the public comment has to do with elk and bear. Am I right there? So do we want to try to get through both of those before lunch and then push the others to after, or should we try to get through, what would you guys like to do? I just want to be respectful of the audience and the folks that are here. And, okay.
For sure.
I think you, from the list of this, I think elk is going to take longer than you'll have time before lunch, so I would maybe do that after lunch.
Okay. Then those folks that have filled out blue slips for elk, hopefully you'll be able to remain till after lunch. If you filled out a blue slip for elk, we're going to push that topic to after lunch. If you're not able to stay that long until after lunch, raise your hand, let me know, and I'll make sure we capture your comments before we break for lunch. Does that work? Okay. So Krista, in that case, let's just go from top to bottom, and we're going to skip elk, and we'll pick that up after lunch.
That sounds good, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Let's see, I can walk you through now some of the other major changes to this chapter. So first of all, as I mentioned previously, season choice hunts are listed with an X throughout the chapter. You can see this on page 5, 6, 94, and 116. Also, throughout this document, you will see red line changes to implement and codify the previously approved 2020 to 2024 big game season structure. And then we also have specific changes from the issue papers that I presented in November of 2019. And so I've tried to break those out by species and also put them in order so you can follow along in the chapter as needed. So with your permission, I'll start with sheep. The sheep regulatory changes. So we have, first of all, adding a ram bighorn sheep archery season to S66. This you can find on page 36. Second of all, we have adding a second archery season for bighorn sheep in S69. This you can find on page 36. Next, we have adding a rifle hunt code for ram bighorn sheep in S70. And removing S70 from the current archery hunt code. This is on page 36 and page 41. Next, we have creating two ram bighorn sheep rifle licenses in S15 and changing the dates of the U bighorn sheep season in S15 accordingly. This is on page 38. And finally, for sheep, we have eliminating the ewe bighorn sheep season in S35, which you can find on page 39. So I guess it's up to the commission to whether we'd like to take individual motions on these, but given the large volume, we were thinking that might be easier.
Certainly, we can do that. Any public comments specific to the sheep changes? Okay.
There is one.
All right, thank you.
Hi.
Thank you, Zach.
Mark Zachary, Rocky Mountain Bighorn Society. And since I won't be here tomorrow, I'll just go off agenda for a moment. You'll be hearing or seeing the first proposal for the herd management plan for RBS 12. We were asked for our comments on that and support that plan as presented. Additionally, all of these changes, the RMBS supports. One of our missions is to assure sportsperson opportunities when appropriate. So the increase in 10 licenses and these changes, we've been, Commissioner Adams spoke about inclusion. We've been asked for our opinions and appreciate the chance to weigh in on these. And they're in line with our mission and our goals, and they have our support, especially the season splitting in S15. It might seem like a complicated issue or a small thing, but when you consider that the odds of drawing a bighorn sheep tag are almost 100-1, giving sportspersons that opportunity for an uncrowded experience and an additional 4 weeks to hunt, we think given the rarity of these opportunities, it's very important to give the sports person every opportunity to maximize it, and we appreciate the fact that CPW is willing to think outside the box. Any questions? Thanks.
Thank you. Okay. Any other additional comments that I didn't see? Okay. Is there a motion to adopt proposed regulations related to sheep?
So moved.
Commissioner Garcia, second?
Second.
Commissioner Bray, thank you. We can do a voice vote for this. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. Next one.
Great. We'll move on to mountain goat. First, we have creating nanny-only mountain goat licenses for all rifle seasons in G10. You'll find this on page 44. Next, we have combining the four individual nanny-only mountain goat rifle seasons in G15. Into one nanny-only season concurrent with the four either-sex mountain goat rifle seasons in G15, which is on pages 45 and 46. And you'll also see changes that we talked about earlier to combine mountain goat units G3 and G13 into a single GMU and update the related hunt code on page 42 and 45 in this version. Those are the proposed changes for mountain goat, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any questions or comments of commissioners? Any public comments specific to the mountain goat regulations? Laura, are you okay? Okay. We can go ahead and do a voice vote. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Oh, sorry. I got concerned. All right. Is there a motion to adopt the proposed regulations related to goat?
So moved.
Commissioner Garcia, second. Commissioner Schaefer, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Okay. Thank you, Krista.
The next item is related to bear. Do you think we have enough time to start that item, or?
I don't want to force folks who can't stay until after lunch, and I know we do have public comments. So let's try to get through bear, and if that means deer and pronghorn and moose get pushed, that's okay.
Okay.
And again, public, if something is getting pushed that you need to speak to and you're not able to stay, just let me know.
So bear, we have one issue, which is presented for you in final regulations. This is designating all general bear licenses in B6 as list B and all private land only bear licenses as list C. You can find that change on page 8. That's all we have for you related to bear.
Okay, I know we've heard a lot. We did have the issue identification in November as well. So any commissioner comments or concerns off of that? Okay, I'd like to hear a public comment. Andrew Curry. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair, Executive Director, Director Prinslow, and commissioners. So we all know that black bears and cougar are crucial species in our ecosystem and belong to all the people of Colorado as a public trust. I and many others feel the agency consistently makes policies that results in taking too many bear and cougar, in our opinion, via hunting in order to increase deer and elk herds for hunting. The agency always seems to have a policy about decreasing bear populations. So given the annual bear harvest numbers in this DAU, B6, for the past 4 years are per the 2013 plan for this DAU, why change the license structure to increase the harvest at this time? I am concerned that the agency's bear hunting quotas in this DAU and others are unsustainable. I realize that's something to look at in the future. So therefore, I'm definitely concerned when I see these bear license expansions up to an unlimited harvest per license. My reasons for concern include the license expansion is in addition to other changes in neighboring large areas of the state, so-called DAUs, to reduce those bear populations. There was a lack of detail in the rulemaking supporting material about the rationale for and the total impact of these changes, license changes. The agency so far has no population study, not estimate, but study of bears in this DAU, nor does our agency yet have population monitoring to know for sure whether bear populations are increasing, stable, or decreasing. This action appears to go against the agency's own very good science from that six-year Bears of Durango study. And I have a couple examples here. The clock is counting. But so a couple things are, for example, the bear use of human development resulting in actually greater bear mortality rates and can induce population declines. And that's something around human-bear conflict. And I realize that's different than population. Also from the CPW's research, human-bear conflicts increase as bears change their behavior in response to natural food conditions, not as a function of bear population size. So I just caution us on that. I was also curious what the predicted benefit to our ecosystems of killing so many bears. We're not sure how many bears we're talking about. And are there possible negative side effects from this license expansion, including increased human-bear conflict over unsecured garbage in towns or increased livestock predation due to disrupting the bear social structure or training of their young? I was also curious what alternatives to reducing the bear population were explored. And again, what's the estimated additional number of bears that will be killed under these new license rules or expansions? And when will this change be reversed or changed? Better skip over here. You know, for a solution, because I like to be constructive in my comments here, I was curious what the plans are for the agency to prove that we have sustainable bear population, which we all want, even with the hunting quotas and with license changes like these, and to do so transparently. So I and many others would feel more supportive and comfortable with changes like this if the agency transitioned to population studies and monitoring for bear and cougar, as we talked about before, instead of the habitat density models, which have been shown, at least in some studies, to overestimate bear population, for example, in the state of Washington. In conclusion, I encourage our agency on this and all matters relating to management of black bears and cougar to communicate more openly and transparently so we, the public, know which people and groups are asking for the agency to reduce bear population, how the decision is made, why it is made, what other aspects of wildlife management it intersects with, and the ramifications of these management decisions on the population and the ecosystem, given the positive, important contributions of black bear and cougar on our ecosystems. Thank you again for considering my comments.
Thank you, Mr. Curry. Any questions or comments for Mr. Curry for his comments? Thank you. Certainly, I think in our issue papers, we do touch on some of the items that you mentioned of reasons, and whether it's biological and some of those things, but may not be exhaustive. Mr. Vieira, anyone else have any response or comments on the concerns around bear? Mr. Dreher, thank you.
Hello, good morning still, I guess, almost. So Brian Dreher, Terrestrial Section Manager, talking to you guys for the first time in this capacity. Good morning, Madam Chair, Directors, Commission. I think some background on this B6 population might be a little helpful. to kind of put all of this in context. So you all know that we have our bear management plans that set forth the long-term management strategy for populations of bears. And in B6, the management plan was final and approved by the commission in 2013 and called for a moderate reduction in the population, followed by then the duration of the remaining part of the plan to be managed for stable management. This decision was not only adopted, or the plan itself was put in place by the commission at that time in 2013, but it also had pretty extensive public comment that kind of formed the management directive that direction we were taking with B6. So as you know, and it's part of this whole process that we see today, that our hunting regulations and license numbers are set annually to try to achieve the objectives set forth in the plans. Since the adoption of the B6 plan, the higher harvest rates specified in the plan to achieve the moderate reduction have not been realized. And therefore, the bear population, an increase in harvest is still needed to achieve the goals set forth in that plan, and hence the reason why we're starting to look at these other strategies to increase bear harvest. In the past number of years, as you know, we've had to try to liberalize bear harvest to try and get these harvest rates up in these areas where we want to increase harvest. And this has led to many over-the-counter with cap hunting units actually not meeting their caps. So we have a lot of licenses that go unsold. So this is yet another effort, like we have with other species, to try and increase the number of bear licenses that we can get in front of our, to our public to try and help us with achieving the goals of the management plan. So, just for clarification,
just so I understand, there's not an increase in the quota, rather a change in how we're distributing licenses.
So quotas are evaluated and looked at in our March time frame, right? So we set regulations now on the seasons that we're going to offer, and then of course all our limited license quotas then are then evaluated in the March time frame. So this sets forth what seasons we're going to offer for then populating quota for any of the limited licenses then in March. Does that make sense?
Okay. Any other questions? Director Gibbs.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can you talk about the population quotas? Mr. Curry mentioned he thought there wasn't updated information, data. Can you speak to last time that was done and how frequently that's done?
So right around the time that this management plan was put in place, we also were doing the research project down out of Durango. And so within that research plan, we kind of extrapolate the number of bears that we think are based in that landscape based on densities. And what we can say is this was kind of predated that research, but since that research has concluded, the density estimates that we used within this plan are pretty consistent with the first two years of density data that we collected in that research project. So, to his point as it relates to the extrapolation of the number of bears on that landscape, what we did within this management plan is consistent with what we found from an actual density estimate collected from non-invasive techniques, a method to estimate bear abundance down there. And so I think that gives us some level of reassurance that, the estimates that we had within the plan are pretty consistent with what we might see on the ground down there. Does that make sense?
Director Penzler.
I might just add, it's going to, and there's probably a broader discussion, but I'm glad to have that at another time. The second part of that question, Executive Director, is that time and cost prohibitive to have a monitoring station at every game management unit level around the state. And so we, no different than deer or elk, will do either research projects or density-specific projects. Brian did one in Salida where we collected DNA and did mark recapture. And so you check the numbers, true population estimates, not density dependent on harvest or habitat, and to check your data and science data around the West. And so when we've done that specific into Durango, it was spot on to get to that. We check those, check the literature, and then you're looking annually at the mortality, percent female offtake, habitat exchange, or habitat models. We also have our field fill out every year the production of mast, acorns, things on the landscape, and how that affects bears. So those are all plugged in every year to answer that question.
And to Dan's point, we went through a series of, we had actually how many study areas?
Nine
study areas statewide a number of years ago over a six-year period where we looked at all different, we had one down in Trinchera, we had the Durango study area where we were estimating abundance and density. We had one that was up near Glenwood. We had one in Middle Park. So they were spread throughout the state so that we could get some Colorado-specific density information on the number of bears we have in the landscape. So
I think it's also important, this speaks to Commissioner Adams' comment about the regional view, and I think had I not pushed one of these items out to after lunch, it would have been much more clear the way that staff has it, the order that they have it. But one thing to take note of is the bear quota in this area and the change in elk license in this area, and as we've heard through many meetings, the diminishing, I don't know if diminishing is the right word, but decrease in cow-calf ratios in this region, and also, you know, given how many things this agency and this division can manage on our own, I think it is important to look at what are we doing with bear, what are we doing with elk in this area of the world. So just when we have the elk discussion after lunch, just keep in mind the decisions we made with bear and everything else and how those things intersect. Commissioner Haskett.
Thank you, Chairman. I just want to point out one thing that we went over this, and I think it was Burlington actually, but don't forget how much conflict the humans have with bears, and I don't think you can turn on the news from May till September and not see a day where somebody didn't have a conflict with a bear. So that means that there's a population problem to me. So I want to remind everyone of that.
Commissioner Hauser.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, I would just concur with Commissioner Haskett's comments, and certainly, again, sympathetic and respectful of Mr. Curry's comments, and certainly the staff and the science around this. You know, in the Roaring Fork Valley, and I often try to talk to hunters and others that are out in the field, and one in particular who's been hunting in that part of our state for 30 years, he's seeing far more bears than he's seeing elk, and is seeing the sort of the results, at least in our part of the world, and certainly in Aspen, Colorado, and some other places where they end up in dumpsters and walking down, you know, the middle of the street, you know, the human impact is clear, and there the complexion and the mix is certainly changing. Just in the 6 years that I've been in the Roaring Fork Valley, we see far more bears than we ever have where I live. So it is a challenge, and the question is how is it managed? Recognizing that this particular part of the state is particularly acute. But I would certainly encourage and request of Director Prenslow and the team to continue to give us as much information about the science and the opportunities we have to consider the various different alternatives as we move forward and in other parts of the state that are feeling the impact as well.
Great.
Commissioner Blecka and then Commissioner Vigil.
I would like to make the comment. I think there's room for us to market this hunting opportunity differently with regards to what Commissioner Haskett and Commissioner Hauser had said. You know, there is wildlife human impact conflict, and maybe there's a way that as a agency we could look at increasing interest around that and reducing that somehow instead of it just, I don't know, being kind of just left there. I think that you could maybe make the argument that you're maybe helping these communities by, you know, purchasing a bear tag and going after it.
Just saying. Commissioner Vigil and then Commissioner Adams.
I just wonder if we can sync our herd management plans. When we do a herd management plan for bear in one area, that we also do one for elk in that area and possibly for deer, so that would help us kind of sync things and see if one population is going up and the other one down, and whether, I don't know if that's cause and effect, but it's something to point out that if we could sync them somehow time-wise. I know it's not easy because we're doing herd management plans every 10 years or sometimes longer than that, but I would like to see that so it gives us an idea, because when I look at herd management plans, no matter what it is,
I really pay attention to what the HPP, the local HPP committees are saying, because those people live on the land, and they know what's happening to animals, to whatever it is, whether it's deer or bear or anything. So that's key to get that information, in addition to our biologists and DWMs. But I think if we could somehow sync them, it would add some benefit to us.
Commissioner Adams.
Thank you. I also wanted to just raise the issue of habitat loss. You know, I live in Boulder County. Over the last 8 years, I've seen a significant increase in how many humans are roaming and how less habitat is available for the animals in our community there. And I also know that this expansion in population in the Front Range is starting to seep its way west. So I'm wondering, again, not outside of our area of influence in this moment, but for future consideration, how we can better collaborate with both business development as well as housing as a major driver for this, you know, imbalance in our ecosystem. Thank you.
Great global comments there. I heard marketing. I heard how can we better work with development. Commissioner Bray.
Thank you. I probably should remain silent, but I live and work in this unit that these licenses are being proposed, and have my family's operated there since 1906. So you can do the math, and we went from a population of almost no bears to there's more bears than there are deer and elk now. There just are a lot of bear on the landscape, whether you. I have a very respectful person in the room over there in Scott Wake, and I have argued bear numbers that he couldn't count bears for a long time, but he finally admitted last time that he hadn't counted as many bears as there is on the landscape. But there just is. And what this proposal is actually putting, it's not really increasing licenses. It's putting them in the hands of dedicated bear hunters and private land where the conflicts are and where we can actually maybe harvest some bears. It's a great tool. It's a small drop in the bucket. We still have all the restrictions in place. We can't hunt before September 2nd. We can't hunt with bait and dogs. It's still a spot and stock sport, which is hard on its own. This isn't going to increase a lot of bear harvest, but it will probably increase some, and we need every tool we can get, and I applaud the move.
You know, along those lines, we only have about 7% of our bear hunters actually purchase a second license, and of the bear hunters that purchase, and we only have a 0.3% in this last year of bear hunters that actually purchase more than two licenses. So we're talking at, you know, so as it relates to the overall impact of this, obviously, we don't know these types of changes until they happen, but then we make changes to our management as we go forward on an annual basis. So this is something that if we achieve the management goal set forth in the management plan, we have the ability to revisit this on an annual basis like we are now and make changes in terms of getting, you know, make changes to these seasons for or making licenses limited, whatever we need to do, and that's just part of the process that we go through on an annual basis.
Director Gibbs.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And I just want to add, some of you have already spoken a little bit about the, you know, conflicts that we see with human and bears, and especially, you know, in the more resort areas. You know, I live in Breckenridge, for example, and the Madam Chair and I both live in Breckenridge. But, you know, you see the VRBOs, the Airbnb, so many people visit and are just, I would say, not aware of the wildlife in the areas. And that's where you see a lot of times in the news, you know, in Aspen and so forth, this growing conflict. But I think we have a great opportunity to work with Colorado Counties Incorporated, Colorado Municipal League, to really look at best management practices. We can look at communities around the state that have had very strict ordinances, and not only ordinances, but, you know, ones that are enforced. And I think that could really be helpful, you know, big picture as we know we're seeing this growing conflict But, you know, I think CPW can be a great leader working with these organizations to just figure out what ordinances should be in place statewide.
Thank you. I'd like to go to a vote. I do want to recognize, you know, how much work we... It's pretty amazing the wildlife populations that we have. The fact that we do have human wildlife interaction issues is, you know, means we have wildlife. So I am very appreciative of everyone's thoughts and comments, and very appreciative of staff of all the work that's gone into this. So thank you, and thank you for that discussion. I think that was helpful. To that end, is there a motion to adopt the proposed regulations and season dates for bear? I'm sorry. Looks like I missed a couple of public comment. I apologize. But if you. Please, if you don't mind speaking into the mic.
Hi, I'm Kareem Mahoon. I'm from Colorado Springs. I just wanted to say that, you know, I know that with my experience with bears that, I mean, I grew up in Minnesota. I worked in camps up there for 4 years and did a lot of camping up in the Boundary Waters, leading out campers there, campfire girls. And the only time we ever had problems in the Boundary Waters canoe area with bears, and we had them consistently as long as we were in the area where motorboats were allowed in, and those areas were the areas that were most trashed. That's where we would find empty cans and other kinds of trash from people, previous campers. There, yes, we had bears come into our camps. They never threatened us. They were obviously not afraid of us. They came right close to us, but never threatened or harmed us in any way. Once we got into areas where there were no motorboats allowed, where there was no longer any trash, we never, never saw a bear. So I really, really think it's really important that we need to work with the communities and with the people, and I don't care if there has to be heavy fines or whatever, but something has to be worked out that this cannot continue, the trash and bird feeders and whatever else is available that's drawing the bears into the communities and getting them into trouble. That's not fair to the bears. That's on us, on as people, and that's where the management needs to happen. Because we're the ones drawing the bears in. Out in the wilderness, you're not seeing them that much. We certainly never saw them out in the wilderness. It was only where people had come in and been disrespectful of the land and left their trash around that we saw bears. And again, they were not threatening towards us in any way, and they came close. I mean, I stuck my head out of the tent one day, and the bear was right there on the other corner of the tent, and he didn't do anything. And there were many other encounters like that where a bear came up close behind somebody. They were never threatening. And again, it only happened where people had their trash out, and I think that's really where we need to address this, and that there has to be some strict laws and some strict consequences for people that are not complying. If they want to live in these wilderness communities and be in these corridors, they have to play by the rules. You know? People have to be held responsible. It shouldn't be punishment on the bears just. Okay. So, and I think that's going to keep your bear populations down too. You look at what's happening in Wisconsin where they're doing all the baiting, and those bear populations have gone sky high because of all the available food. And all they're doing is creating more bears to hunt. And that's not fair to the bears. That's not a way of life of how you treat animals or respect the animals. And I hope that Colorado doesn't become like that and that we get a handle on this. Okay? Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Any other public comments that I missed on this specific topic? Okay. And again, apologies. We're going to push the rest of this to after lunch. I do want to take a vote on this topic, though. Is there a motion to adopt the proposed regulations and season dates for bear?
So moved.
So moved by Commissioner Haskett, second by Commissioner Bray. Let's take I guess we should do a roll call vote, given all the discussion.
Adam?
Yes.
Becca?
Yes.
Bray?
Yes.
Garcia?
Yes.
Haskett?
Yes.
Hauser?
Yes, and again, with appreciation and respect to those that provided public comment. Thank you.
McDaniel is absent. Schaefer?
Yes.
Vardy?
Yes.
Vigo?
Yes.
Chair Zimmerman?
Yes.
Motion carries unanimously.
So, Krista, if you don't mind doing whatever reshuffling you need to do for right after lunch, Jeff
for species conservation. We'll talk about where to fit that into the agenda. Mark Leslie, if you don't mind, I know you had one thing to say, and then we'll break for lunch after that.
Afternoon, Madam Chair, Commissioners, Executive Director, Director Prinzlow, Mark Leslie, Northeast Region Manager. I'll keep this kind of short and sweet. But normally at this time of the meetings, we do awards and presentations, but we're going to kind of diverge from that today a little bit. And, you know, a very important part of the mission of Colorado Parks and Wildlife is connecting the public to the outdoors. And Colorado's changing. We generally do a pretty good job of connecting our traditional hunting and fishing groups and reaching out to them. But we don't do such a good job with connecting folks that we haven't dealt with in the past or don't know about us. And so to that end, and with Commissioner Adams' help and your help on this issue, we've got some special guests for lunch today that are going to spend lunchtime with the commission, and I'd like to introduce those folks right now. So from Latino Outdoors, I'd like to have Noemi Mora come up here, please. Come on up. From Environmental Learning for Kids, and are based in our own office over here, we've got Loretta Pineda, we've got Ronika Kone, and our own Chris Allegri, who's a board member on the ELK. And then from Calwood Education Center up in Boulder County, we've got Angie Busby here. She's the Natural Resource Manager for that. So we'd like to welcome them. They're going to be joining us for lunch, and if you have anything you want to add at this point, that's great.
Thank you so much. Thank you for being here. We look forward to just having conversations with you at lunch. Thank you for taking the time. Director Prinzlow.
Welcome. And like I said, thank you. We'd love to have you at lunch. And as we break, remind commissioners that right outside you can smile and get your picture taken.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mark. We are coming. We are scheduled to come back from lunch at 1:30.
If you like it, you're fine.
All right, let's call back to order. Let's get the afternoon rolling. We've got to pick up a few things from the morning. All right, Krista, I think we spoke just before lunch on picking up where we left off, so I think you are leading the show.
Yeah, great. Thank you, Madam Chair. So just to revisit, I'm Krista Heiner, Regulations Manager, and we are on Agenda Item 12, which is Chapter W2, Big Game. And I think where we left off, we have two additional kind of regulatory changes related to mountain lions, which were briefly discussed by Mark Vieira, but I just want to make sure that they're covered and approved again. So the first one is opening GMU 471 to mountain lion hunting, combining GMU 45 and 44 into one hunt code, and combining GMUs 47, 43, and 471 into one hunt code. And that's on page 64 of your attached W2 document.
Got it.
The next one is splitting GMU 76 from GMU 79 and 791 to create two separate mountain lion hunt codes. And that's on page 65 of your attached W2 document there. So those are all the changes I have in addition to the ones previously approved for mountain lion.
So just so everyone's aware, this is just basically taking the motion that we made earlier and the conversation that we already had on mountain lion and then how that relates into the changes in the actual regulation published regs. So
correct.
That's what we're voting on here is the red line on pages 64, 65. Any comments, questions? Any public comment on these specific edits to the regulations? Okay. Is there a motion to adopt the proposed regulations related to lion?
So moved.
Commissioner Garcia, is there a second?
Yes.
Commissioner Vigil, we can do a voice vote. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? I asked for, but I didn't see any hands, hopefully. All right, let's move on to the next item. Thank you, Krista.
Sure. So I believe the next item we can cover is deer, if that's okay. So the first part is converting archery deer licenses in D15 from either sex to antlered licenses. You can find that on page 68. The next change is adding second and third season rifle antlerless deer hunt codes in GMUs 55, 66, 67, and 551. You can find this on pages 85 and 86. Moving on, we have amending the boundary description for the private land only deer hunt codes in GMU 38. You can find this on pages 99 and 100. And then we have adding a private land only either sex deer hunt code for GMUs 62, 64, 65, and 441. These are on pages 103 to 106 and also on page 112. And finally, for deer, we have creating a Lift B private land only, mule deer only, antlered rifle license for subunits of GMU 951. And you can find these changes on page 5 and page 115. So those are all the changes, proposed changes I have for you, Madam Chair, for deer.
For deer. Any commissioner comment or question? Any public comments specific to these regulatory changes to deer? We do have one public comment. If you don't mind, approaching the microphone and stating your name, that'd be great. Without tearing a knee or a ligament in your knee. I'm a kindred spirit. I'm right there with you.
Hi, my name's Deborah Taylor again. Briefly, listening to that and having done a lot of CWD research recently, thank you again for letting me pop back up here. I'm a retired public librarian. I did all of my internships at medical libraries. So I volunteer currently at a hospital, so I have medical library galore at my fingertips. I have a son that was stationed in England near ground zero of mad cow disease. I am a Creutzfeldt-Jakob chronic wasting disease, prion disease nut, and I've been studying it chronically for about 10 months. I'm asking that maybe somebody appoint someone to study the grounds on where a lot of your excess deer are at. I don't know if you're aware of, but there is a current study that's been done that says chronic wasting disease is not dissipating from the soils of clay ground right now, clay ground where the grasses come up, and that it's not dissipating in any way. And that might be a thought to consider having a heavier hunting area on those grounds. Granted, most of those hunters will probably be killing possibly CWD-infected deer, but it's just something that came across, I've read recently, and listening to that, and I know that, you know, tags are very important, but I think we've got to also consider the science side of CWD and how bad it's spreading across the state. So just something I'd like to toss out there and tell you that right now they're saying it could be more passable to ground clay-covered grounds. Okay?
Thank you.
Any questions on that? I got a lot of my research is on my phone or print out on my desk, so I can't answer everything off the top of my head, but I've been reading a lot about it because, you know, it's very possible I have family members carrying a prion disease that'll show up in the next 5 to 10 years. And so I stay on top of it.
Great. Thank you for the information.
Thank you.
We do have more public comment. Okay, thank you. Please, Mr. Phelps. Thank you, Commissioner Schaefer.
Good afternoon, Commission. Brad Phelps, Gunnison, Colorado. 3 minutes for Chapter 2. When I was on the commission, I always wanted Chapter 2 to be one full day.
when I was here. But anyway, I'll keep her under three. I'm really here to talk about what the last thing she mentioned was the antlerless deer tags in 55, 66, 67, and 551. I think it's premature to add that hunt code back. Since the big die-off, we've been watching our population. We do not want to return to where we were pre-07 in deer numbers, but I just don't think we're there and don't support these doe tags at this time. I think it's very interesting that the local offices didn't include GMU 54 in this proposal. You know, I think there's a little dissension between staff about this time, too. You know, we're in the Gunnison Basin, we are all over the place. In 05, we had 48 fawns per 100. In 09, we had 27 fawns per 100. Then we jumped back up from 13 to 54. And then last year, in January 19, we had really good counts. We were up in the 70s on fawns. A lot of us who've lived there a long time also do our own ground counts in the 40-plus days we spend in the woods in October, November, and everything pretty much correlates. But what we got to remember is the winter of 16-17, according to the caller monitors, our mortality study, we lost 84% of our fawns that year. Well, I think that this fall, it was really noticeable that that age class was entirely missing from the Gunnison Basin. You know, my ground count showed a decrease. Everything showed a decrease. Unfortunately, the January meeting, we don't have the helicopter counts done post-hunt January of 2020. We know what they're going to be. They're going to be very consistent with what we saw on the ground as hunters this fall. But, you know, in 2005, in GMU 55, they counted basically 3,100 deer. And in 551, 1,677. Jumped to last year, almost identical helicopter time, 1,635 deer in 55, less than half, and 641 in 551. I can understand having an antlerless hunt code. Maybe this entire thing is more important for the May meeting when license numbers are set. But this is a warning shot over the bow that you'll be hearing from us. That we are, the majority, and granted I live in a select group of kind of like-minded people, but none of us are happy with the deer numbers in the Gunnison Basin right now. And then I have more when it comes to Southwest Elk.
Thank you, Mr. Phelps. Questions or discussion for Mr. Phelps for the comments? Okay, thank you. I think we have one more.
Madam Chair, Director Prenslow and Director Gibbs and Commission, I appreciate the opportunity to be here today. My name is Steve Gurry. I'm a fourth generation livestock producer in the Gunnison Basin and an outfitter also. I'm here today speaking on behalf of the Gunnison Wildlife Association. You probably received a letter from them this week. And I'm going to speak to the same thing that Brad spoke to, too, the deer numbers and the doe hunts. Currently, the Gunnison Wildlife Association does not support adding those hunt codes currently. We're very supportive of Colorado's CPW's science-based wildlife management, and we know that everybody does the best job possible to manage our wildlife in this state. But we have concerns with what's going on in the Gunnison Basin with our deer numbers. It's a very passionate community when it comes to wildlife, so there's a lot of people involved with what's taking place, and our concern goes to like the helicopter, the sample surveys. When those flights are taking place, if you go back to, you know, prior to the 07-08 big winter, you know, we counted around 4,000 deer in D22, which is units 55 and 551. And with the model, the population estimate was around 7,500 at that time. With our current count, post-2018, it's telling us that our population is at that same level, right around 7,500-7,800 head. Our concern is between that time frame, those years between the big winter, our sample size, it dropped down as low as I believe 1,700 one year, but it gradually got back up to around 3,000, and it stayed pretty consistent. You know, the sample size is staying the same, but the population, the model continues to tell us that the population is increasing. So, and we're not seeing that on the ground. Gunnison is maybe unique in some sense. Like in 1617, basically all our wildlife was within a mile of the highway. We had so much snow. And like Brad said, we lost 84% of the fawns that year. Last year, again, we had a heavy snow year. Vast majority of our wildlife was close to the highway. And yet, to say that we had 7,500 head of deer is hard for our public to believe that when we're just not seeing those kind of numbers. And that we understand the flights are just a sampling. It's just giving us an idea, and you're managing for trends, for buck-doe ratios, all that. But we struggle with the overall number when that number continues to grow in the model, but yet our sampling size stays the same. If you go back prior to 07, and you look at the graph between the sample size and the population, it's much closer, the gap. But now, currently, it seems like our sample stays the same, but the population keeps increasing. So we just have concerns as far as that goes, and we just appreciate the commission considering not implementing those doe tags at this time. If you do feel the need to do so, we just would appreciate very conservative numbers when it comes to the main meeting. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions or comments? Okay. I think I'd like to take a vote on this one. Okay. Thank you for all the public comment, for the input. Certainly take those into consideration. For today, is there a motion to adopt the proposed regulations and season dates for deer?
I have a comment.
I'm sorry, Commissioner Bray.
That's all right. Much like these gentlemen that just spoke, they have a legacy and a well-known history in the Gunnison Valley. They know what's going on right now. And I've expressed to staff, I've seen in various parts of the state, not just in Gunnison, but we have a hard winter, we have a die-off for whatever reason. We start to build this deer herd back, and we get these numbers back where they're looking pretty good, and then all of a sudden we start hunting does again. And almost invariably, it crashes 2 years later. So I'm in support of giving staff every tool in the toolbox that they need to properly manage our wildlife. So I can support having a doe hunt code. But I'm with you gentlemen on conservative numbers. I don't like to see us, just because we counted more does last year, so let's go harvest them. I'm not in that camp. I think we have to be very, very conservative. Our deer particularly are experience a lot of issues, and if you don't have mamas, you can't raise babies. So I'd go real slow. I want to give our professionals the tools they need, but I really caution on having too many doe tags out there.
So do we have general I tend to agree, do we have general consensus around the ask of staff to, when you do bring numbers, that they be on the conservative side? I know this vote is just the regulation change to add the code, but
we'll look at those numbers in May.
Okay.
So, but I'm just supporting what these gentlemen say. Let's be careful when we're hunting does.
Okay. I'm seeing nodding heads, so I think that's the message getting delivered. Okay. All right. So the motion is on the floor.
Motion to adapt staff recommendation on the hunt codes.
Motion made by Commissioner Bray. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Commissioner Vigil. Voice vote. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right. Thank you, Krista.
Great. Thank you. We'll move on to elk then.
Yes, that'd be great. I do want to make sure that we can get through that.
The first change you'll see is adding GMU 591 to the list of elk antler point restricted units. That is on page 116. Then we have removing the elk 4-point antler restriction for all San Luis Valley game damage hunt codes, also on page 116. Then we have the creation of limited sex-specific, the limited bull and limited cow licenses for archery elk hunting in E16, E24, E30, and E31. You'll find that on pages 116 through 118. Moving on, we have limiting second and third rifle elk seasons in GMU 83. You'll find that on page 124 and also page 142. We have converting certain antlered elk hunt codes in E2 to either sex elk hunt codes and creating a separate hunt code for GMU 214. You'll find those changes on page 127, 143, and 149. Moving on, we have removing the GMU boundary split for the antlerless elk in the second, third, and fourth rifle seasons in GMU 521, and updating the applicable hunt codes. You'll find those changes on page 146. And we have extending the closing date for the private land only antlerless elk hunt in GMUs 3, 4, 5, 301, and 441 to December 31st, and removing unit 201 from the hunt code EF003P5R, and removing GMU 441 from the hunt code EF014P5R, which is on pages 149 and 152. We have removing the private land only either sex elk hunt code in GMU 38, which you can find on page 160. Adding a private land only late antlerless elk season in GMU 42 on page 161. Separating GMUs 59 and 581 for private land only antlerless elk codes in E23 on pages 166. 179 and 180. We have expanding the Rabbit Mountain antlerless elk hunt code EF020L3R, expanding that boundary. You'll see those changes on page 183. We have increasing the late antlerless elk code season length in the Jefferson County portion of GMU 38 to September 1st to January 31st. You'll find that change on page 184. Those are all of the elk changes I have for you, Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you. Do we want to have commission comments, discussion, or should we go straight to public comment? Do we have any commission comments right away? Okay, let's start with public comment, and then we can go from there. Suzanne O'Neill with Colorado Wildlife Federation. Welcome, Suzanne. Thank you for being here.
Madam Chair, Commissioners, Executive Director, Director, Suzanne O'Neill, Colorado Wildlife Federation. I believe you have our comment letter in your packet regarding ELF CAUs 16, 24, 30, and 31. We strongly urge limited for cows and bulls. We believe that herd health is paramount. And we also think that CPW, as they continue their research and monitoring, that they will come back to the commission when they believe that the situation warrants an adjustment from limited and limited. So thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, Suzanne. Any questions or comments? Thank you for your letter and for your comments. Jody Lehman, would you like to speak again? I don't know if she was able to stay. Ms. Lehman, are you here? Okay, I think she maybe made the comment she said she'd like to make, but we'll set her aside. Jennifer Burby with Colorado Outfitters Association. Welcome. Thank you for being here.
Thank you all for your time. We know how much time it takes. I thought I'd spend a little bit of time and introduce you to our association, or reintroduce some of you to our association. We have businesses throughout the state who offer hunting, fishing, and recreational services to the public. Private public land, any gambit of services you can think of, we probably have somebody who offers them. I'm the sitting president this year, and with our eyes on the long-term goal of a healthy, sustainable herd, we do support limiting licenses. We do suggest, and it might be more publicly palatable to some, that you consider over-the-counter with caps with an early release and sales date. Puts everybody on equal footing, still allows you to adjust numbers as necessary, and allows our hunting public to plan their hunt, know they have a tag, and or if they don't get a tag, plan accordingly and still be able to fulfill what they want to be doing. Mostly we support healthy and sustainable herds in the long term, and thank you again for all your time.
Thank you for your comments, for your suggestion. Any questions or follow-up? Okay. Kent Ingram. I thought I saw Kent. Kent, sorry, I did not project my voice very well. Welcome, Mr. Ingram.
Good morning, Madam Chair, Director, Commissioners. I'm testifying today as a sportsman. That's all I've ever been, over the years. You know, Colorado used to be, years ago, a deer state. We weren't very good on elk. We didn't have a lot of elk. Then all of a sudden, things changed. We became, the hot commodity became elk. And that's the way it's been up till now. But we're starting to see challenges with both of these species. You know, we have CWD on deer. We have elk that have challenges population-wise, if not statewide, then certainly within certain DAUs and GMUs. I think, as a sportsman, and believe me, we look forward to the draws. We look forward to every single year we can hunt. But I think sportsmen need to embody the fact that they may need to change. We may need to change in terms of where we hunt, when we hunt, and how we hunt. Because the resource always comes first. And that's my testimony today. These proposed changes, at least as it relates to the four DAUs going limited on cows and bulls, are not statewide. They're in units that we've had serious elk reductions. And the reasons for such are still being determined. But the bottom line is that the elk populations are down. We as hunters need to embody that as much as we maybe are used to hunting where we've hunted for years, but that, folks, needs to change. That's my testimony today. Thanks.
Thank you, Kent. Any questions or conversation for Kent? All right, Bill Canterbury. Thank you, Mr. Canterbury. Welcome again.
Thank you. Welcome, Commissioners, Director, and Madam Chair. Representing the Cattlemen's Association on this issue, I was in Telluride this summer talking about the, statewide limited archery, and the cattlemen supported that, unanimously at our meetings. If we were to back up 20 years, the cattlemen would be here today saying, no way. Even 10 years back, and even 5 years back, they would have been saying, kill every elk on the planet. And just about 3 years ago, they've been watching in their backyards, and the number of elk is going down. Our elk herd, there's some units that's not true, but statewide, our elk population is declining. So they're in support of limiting license, and in this case here, it's not statewide, but we're still supporting that.
Thank you for your comments. Any questions? Okay. Mia Anstein with Four Corners SCI. And please correct me if I mispronounced your name.
Get good on the first name.
How do you say your last name?
My last name is Anstein. Yeah. Thank you for having me up here, Chairman Zimmerman, Director Prinslow, and all the commissioners. I'm happy to be here before you today. As I said, Anstein, Mia Anstein. I'm from Southwest Colorado, and I am an outdoor writer. I try to inspire other people to get outside, hunt, fish, shoot, and recreate. I'm also a regional representative for Safari Club International, and I am a board member for the Four Corners chapter down in Southwest Colorado. The Four Corners chapter has agreed that archery elk licenses should be limited in some capacity in our area, and specifically 31. As an avid hunter, I personally use a variety of means to take. I have an affinity toward archery. I enjoy it quite a bit. I love the connection out there. I've also encouraged a lot of other people to get outside and bow hunt. I've been published in bow hunting magazines. We also have members of our chapter that have the same affinity. We have outfitters, we have archers, and we have non-hunters in our chapter. But it's not about archery hunting, it's about the elk. And so today we wanted to ask you to please support this measure with an increased number of people, homes, vehicles, and so forth. We feel that hunters aren't the main impact on this decline, but it is the only thing you guys can control. So we wanted to reference back in 1990. In the 90s, E31 had an average number of archery hunters of 300. This past year, there were 3,000 in that area. So that's a significant increase. And while we would like to say that we want a guaranteed archery elk hunt every year, what we really want is for the elk to thrive so that hunters for generations to come can have the same possibilities that we have had, the same opportunities. So on behalf of the Four Corners chapter and the members, we support making changes that will reduce the amount of pressure on the elk in our area.
Thank you. Any questions for Ms. Anstein? Thank you. Okay, Steve Hilde, this Colorado Bow Hunters Association. Welcome, Mr. Hilde.
Thank you, Chairman Zimmerman, Commissioners, Director Prenslow. Appreciate the time today. I am here to speak specifically about the Southwest Elk Issue paper. Our position is we support Alternative 3 with no unique hunt codes added to it. This is a huge impact on the archery community. If you look at it statewide, we have about 35,000 bow hunters for elk who participate in over-the-counter hunting. As you look at these four DAUs, including E16, it's about 6,300 hunters. It's 18%, and the impact of this change will be forever felt. I know some guys say, let's get the elk herd back, and we're supportive of that, definitely, but we never seem to move back to over-the-counter type hunting opportunities. In Ray, I believe 21 bow hunters had testified out of the 6,300 that asked for these units to go limited. I understand you received more public input since the Ray meeting, and I understand a majority of those favor Alternative 3. Some of that feedback was animated, perhaps divisive and uninspired or mean-spirited. And so certainly I regret that, and I apologize for that, specifically to you, Commissioner Garcia. But we do publicize, and we try to keep our members informed and give them chances to comment when it's appropriate. I did send out a broadcast email to our membership, and I tried to ask them to be respectful and to stick together, because as hunters, we all need to stick together. But this particular issue leads to division because we just seem to be talking about archery here. As you look at the biology of this issue, all three of these alternatives are good biological solutions. Archers will be limited in cow take in all three of the scenarios. The next question that you would have is, what's fair? Because part of this issue paper is, well, what is fair? Our archers' disproportionate take of cow hunting was on the increase as our participation increased. And so certainly as we look at fairness, that's the difficult question. While there's 15,000 rifle hunters, there's 6,300 archers. The biological piece of this in terms of harvest is that archers have a 3% success rate on cows, while some of the data that I sent to you suggests the rifle cow take has a 54% harvest rate. So as you look at fairness, you know, one thing to consider too is displacement of hunters when we go limited. Now, I know there was discussion in Ray, the quota should be ample, guys may not be displaced, but what you got to realize, I talked to a guy, he had four preference points. He hunts in unit 7-11. He will not apply for that as a first choice. Maybe guys get those tags as second choice, but we believe there will be a number of folks that are displaced from hunting in these units. And again, the question is, where are they going to go? You know, I heard hunting's going to get better. I'm not sure if that's abundance of elk or bull maturity, but I can tell you, if guys leave, hunting will get worse for 85% of our bow hunters. So as you consider this, we're not saying limit rifle hunters. We're just saying we'd like parity with rifle hunters. 23 of our GMUs will go limited, while rifle hunters remain totally unlimited in second and third in those units. Additionally, if we go limited, rifle hunters will have the opportunity and freedom to move in the OTC system, while we do not. And again, our participation is fairly limited compared to those rifle hunters out there. So I thank you very much for your time. Again, ask you to support alternative three with no unique hunt codes.
Thank you, Mr. Hilde. Any discussion from staff or from commission or response from staff or any follow-up? Commissioner Blecka.
Since Steve, you brought it up, the response is coming up, coming towards Director Commissioner Garcia. They also named staff. There were some correspondents that called out staff, and I feel that's inappropriate. So when people needed to